Many of us may have encountered the 19th century novel, The Red Badge of Courage by Stephen Crane in high school. Some of us remember that Stephen Crane made his way to Scranton on assignment for McClure's magazine, researching directly and writing an article titled In the Depths of a Coal Mine. What many may not know is that Stephen Crane was related to the Peck family of Scranton through his mother, and that his grandfather, the Reverend Dr. George Peck, had written a volume titled Wyoming, Its History, Stirring Incidents, and Romantic Adventures in 1858. It happens that a set of three short stories titled Wyoming Valley Tales centers on the Battle of Wyoming, and they were written by Stephen Crane, and they reflect some of the experiences of his own relatives. Here's the way Stephen Crane opens his story titled The Battle of 40 Fort. The Congress sitting at Philadelphia had voted our Wyoming Valley two companies of infantry for its protection, with the single provision that we raise the men and arm them ourselves. This was not too brave a gift, but no one could blame the poor Congress, and indeed one could wonder that they found occasion to think of us at all, since at the time every gentleman of them had his coattails gathered high in his hands in readiness for flight to Baltimore. But our two companies of foot were no sooner drilled, equipped, and in readiness to defend the colony when they were ordered off down to the Jerseys to join General Washington. So it can be seen what service Congress did us in the way of protection. Thus, the Wyoming Valley, 60 miles deep in the wilderness, held its log houses full of little besides mothers, maids, and children. To the clamor against this situation, the badgered Congress could only reply by the issue of another generous order, directing that one full company of foot be raised in the town of Westmoreland for the defense of said town, and that the said company find their own arms, ammunition, and blankets. Even people with our sense of humor could not laugh at this joke. All this we learn from the narrator of this story. When the first two companies were forming, I had thought to join one, but my father forbade me, saying that I was too young, although I was full 16, tall, and very strong. So it turned out that I was not off fighting with Washington's army when British Colonel Butler, with his Rangers and Indians, raided the Wyoming Valley. Perhaps I was in the better place to do my duty, if I could. In my own family, my father's imperturbability was scarce superior to my mother's coolness, and such was our faith in them that we 12 children also seemed to be fearless. Neighbor after neighbor came to my father in despair of the defenseless condition of the valley, declaring that they were about to leave everything and flee over the mountains to Stroudsburg. My father always wished them Godspeed and said no more. If they urged him to fly also, he usually walked away from them. Solomon continues, "Finally, there came a time when all the Indians vanished. We knew what their disappearance portended. It was a serious sign. Too soon the news came that Colonel Butler was on his way. The valley was vastly excited. People with their smaller possessions flocked into the blockhouses, and militia officers rode everywhere to rally every man. A small force of Continentals, regulars of the line, had joined our people, and the little army was now under the command of a Continental officer, Major Zebulon Butler. I had thought that with all this hubbub of an impending life and death struggle in the valley, that my father would allow the work of our farm to slacken. But in this I was notably mistaken. The milking and the feeding and the work in the fields went on." It was a life with which I was familiar, but it did seem to me that with the forces almost upon us, Father might have allowed me at least to go to the fort and see our men drilling. But one morning we aroused as usual at his call at the foot of the ladder, and dressing more quickly than Andrew, I climbed down from the loft to find my father seated by a blazing fire, reading by its light in his Bible. "Son," he said. "Yes, father." go and fight. We skip ahead and find young Solomon in retreat. Behind me, as I ran, I could hear the screams of men cleaved to the earth. I think the first things that most of us discarded were our rifles. Afterward, upon serious reflection, I could not recall where I gave my rifle to the grass. I ran for the river. I saw some of our own men running ahead of me, and I envied them. The point of contact with the river was the top of a high bank, but I did not hesitate to leap for the water with all my ounces of muscle. I struck out strongly for the other shore. I expected to be shot in the water. Upstream and downstream, I could hear the crack of rifles, but none of the enemy seemed to be paying direct heed to me. I swam so well that I was soon able to put my feet on the slippery round stones and wade. When I reached a certain sandy beach, I lay down and puffed and blew my exhaustion. I watched the scene on the river. Indians appeared in groups on the opposite bank, firing at various heads of my comrades, who, like me, had chosen the Susquehanna as their refuge. I saw more than one hand fling up and the head turn sideways and sink. I set out for home in that perfect spirit of dependence which I had always felt toward my father and mother. When I arrived, I found nobody in the living room but my father, seated in his great chair and reading his Bible, even as I had left him. The whole shame of the business came upon me suddenly. "Father," I choked out, we have been beaten." "Aye," said he, "I expected it." Words of author Stephen Crane from his short story titled The Battle of 40 Fort, based on experiences of his relatives, recorded by his grandfather, the Reverend Dr. George Peck of Scranton. Crane once told a close friend that writers can't depict reality relying on imagination alone. Instead, they must immerse themselves entirely in the environment they wish to write about. That from The New Yorker. We don't know how many writers there will be among the many reenactors who will assemble on July 11th and 12th, if any, along the very river Crane described in his short story, The Susquehanna. The 24th Connecticut Militia Regiment will present their Battle of Wyoming event weekend in Nesbitt Park in Kingston, and they invite us all to attend and be drawn into that experience. Sherry Emershaw is the president of the 24th CMR, and Jen Ockman a recent member, and they paid a visit to the WVIA studios to share some history with us. Sherry Emershaw.
Wyoming Valley is fascinating, and as you know, back in the early 18th century, it was known as Westmoreland or Wyoming, and it was claimed by the colony of Connecticut. There was a charter granted by King Charles II to form the colony of Connecticut. In that charter, there was a certain paragraph of wording that led the powers that be in Connecticut at the time to say that this land in northern Pennsylvania all the way to the sea was theirs in perpetuity. The reason behind it is colony of Connecticut was a small colony, and actually it was becoming overpopulated because, remember, it was an agrarian society and most of the people were farmers. It also had poor soil. So the ever-ending quest of land, and they weren't alone in the colonies at this time period, they were always searching for more land. So they claimed this area, pretty much the dividing line of Interstate 80, that crosses pretty much in the center of Pennsylvania, everything north would be claimed by Connecticut. And that was a bone of contention between the Pennsylvanians then and now the Connecticut, because you weren't states, you were colonies, and they considered the Connecticut people trespassers. So that led on to a land dispute that lasted 40 years here in Wyoming Valley. Now, if you look at the old correspondence that we have in our archives at the Historical Society, it is referred to Connecticut Westmoreland, Connecticut, they refer to it, or Wyoming, Connecticut. And they refer to it in Connecticut. Ask Connecticut. It's amazing when you look at the old papers and the old correspondence between the powers that be here in Wyoming Valley. And it was a constant correspondence to the Connecticut Assembly because they were the governing body who governed this area.
What about the fort, the 40 Fort? What is that and where does that come in?
Well, they first settled here in 1762 near what we know as Mill Creek by Wilkes-Barre General Hospital. They had a small settlement there. They came and they planted their crops. The following year, they came back to harvest them, and there was a terrible attack by natives and some Panamites killing some of the settlers, and they ousted them from the valley. Well, they saw the beauty of Wyoming Valley, the wonderful farmland, the river, and all that it had to offer, and they came back in 1769 with 40 able-bodied men to make the permanent settlement, as we know now, as Wyoming Valley and the Wilkes-Barre area. And 40 Fort is named after the first 40 men and the fort they then built for protection.
Now, you're here to talk about a reenacting event around the Battle of Wyoming. Then take us to the cause and those who were involved in that battle.
Well, the Battle of Wyoming was General John Butler of the British. He was the British forces. His headquarters were pretty much in Niagara, New York. That was where he had his operations. He also had Tories. Tories were people that were loyalists to the crown, and they also had Indian allies. And he planned an attack along the frontier. The reason for the frontier is he wanted to split the New England states from the lower states by invading from the north. And that would destroy a lot of our land, the then-to-be United States. And it was a strategic way of splitting it, defeating, and taking over from Canada all of New England. So the frontier was in his way. And the frontier was primarily defenseless. They didn't have the Continental Army. They only had militias and such. And here in Wyoming Valley, believe it or not, we were very patriotic. If you look at population compared to other settlements along the frontier, our percentage going to serve was higher than most. So they knew we were very much supportive of the patriotic cause. That caught their eye. And we also supplied the Continental Army with a lot of provisions, mostly crops and supplies. So we were number one target on John Butler's list.
We can still drive along Route 11. We can see the Wyoming Monument. There are places we can trace physically where the actual battle took place. Describe what happened.
Well, on the morning of July 3rd, 1778, Colonel Nathan Dennison, who was commander at the time, had ordered the 9 militia companies to report to 40 Fort. Not all of them made it. 2 of our independent companies were serving with Washington's army. And some of the men resigned, some of the men deserted. They knew their homes were in danger. They arrived a few days prior to that. And of course, the one company that we had, what was left of our men, was commanded by Captain Spaulding. He finally said, Washington, go help Wyoming. He never made it in time. He was on his way. So in the morning of July 3rd, 1778, the men, they were all gathered in 40 Fort. There was a lot of discussion, a heated discussion. Some people said, let's just wait it out. They didn't know the numbers. Nobody knew the numbers. So they were going to wait it out and wait for help. But there was a lot of heated discussions, and a lot of people said, hey, look, we're defending our livelihood. We're defending our women, our children, our homes. They opted to go out and fight. So they fought, and around 4 o'clock, between 4:30 and 5 in the afternoon, it lasted only about a half hour, and it was a rout. They were defeated.
And the significance then for us today is to look at that battle, and we understand that people were willing to put their lives on the line. What difference did it make for the situation between Pennsylvania and Connecticut, or did it?
It did not. It didn't make a difference at all. Again, it was still claimed by Connecticut. The Battle of Wyoming was a tragedy. Congress knew of the danger. They were not ignorant of it. Washington just simply did not have the troops to supply. He really did not. They were begging for help. As a result of the Battle of Wyoming, we had the Hartley Expedition, which occurred within a month to try and stop the Indian threat and the native threat. That lasted from August till October. Colonel Thomas Hartley came back and said, look, you're still under threat. You don't have any protection here. And he warned the authorities, you got to do something. What happened in November was what really had Washington say, I have to make a decision. Cherry Valley in New York was a settlement like ours, a little smaller. The natives attacked, and some of Butler's, his son, Walter, was commanding that, John Butler's son, Walter. They attacked the Cherry Valley settlement, and they killed a lot of settlers. A lot of people don't understand that. Maybe they don't realize. No civilian was killed during the Battle of Wyoming. They were granted pretty much safe harbor. They were harassed. They were robbed of their items, their homes burned, their crops destroyed, but no settler was killed. And then there was a great escape because of, you know, the destruction of the settlement. There was a mass exodus from the valley. They went in all different directions, and it was a virtual depopulation of Wyoming Valley.
Now, you are here as part of an event that's going to be taking place on the weekend of July 11th and 12th, and we have here the 24th Connecticut Militia Regiment presenting this reenactment of the Battle of Wyoming. Introduce us to the 24th Connecticut Militia Regiment.
And I think Sherry can speak to that because she's been a member much longer than I have, and she is the president.
Well, we're thrilled to have you, Jen. Okay. We have about 35 members of our regiment. The 24th Connecticut Militia Regiment was officially formed on October 17th, 1775. We celebrated our 250th birthday last year.
We had cake.
Yeah, we had cake. We were originally 9 companies. Militia companies were formed in different districts, with a 10th company formed in the southern district, would have been Salem Township, Huntington Township, a Shikshinny area, and the following year. We also had 2 independent companies ordered by Congress in 1776 to be formed. These independent companies were led by Captains Samuel Ransom and Robert Durkee, were the 2 commanding officers of those 2 independent companies. They were formed here in Wyoming Valley. They left to meet up with Washington's Continental Army January 1st, 1777, and they eventually made their way to Morristown, New Jersey at Washington's headquarters and reported for duty. They served in many battles. A couple I could think of as Brandywine was one, Morristown, Fort Mifflin, Bound Brook, New Jersey. So they did have major battles that they served in. And as I said before, we lost a lot of men, disease, desertion. And out of the 2 companies, one was formed, and as I said, he was the gentleman, Captain Spaulding, formed the independent company who tried to make it back here to Wyoming Valley, but he was too late.
Have you been someone involved in reenacting? What is it that is important to you about being part of this?
Well, I love Revolutionary War history, and I've been interested in that period of time. I love history, but especially Revolutionary War history. And I just became very involved with the reenacting community. I started out as a docent for a very old home here, a historic home here. And one thing led to another, and I got into the reenacting angle of it. I think it's very important to tell the story of the Revolutionary War, not just for special anniversaries. We're a historic area. We should be very proud of our Revolutionary War heritage, that we actually had a role in the founding of our nation. And our job with the 24th is to portray the men and women of Wyoming Valley during the colonial period and of the Revolutionary War. That is our job, to educate the public, to let them never forget the sacrifices that these men made and the life that they led. It was a hard life to help establish our nation as we know it today.
And Jen, we know that you and your husband, John, do a good deal of historical performing and dancing and recreating a broad range of times yourself, and you are an exquisite seamstress, and you have made such lovely period costumes, but that doesn't mean you have to go out and be part of a reenactment of a battle, for example.
This is new for me. All of this is new for me. My ignorance of our local history, it's monstrous. There's just so much rich history here, going back even farther than I had been doing. And so I was doing a program at the Sweatland. I was on the board, and I met up with the 24th. They were there doing some programming, and Sherry and several other members invited me to join. And John and I have both joined. And I know I can speak for him. He wanted to join because he's so fascinated with our local history. And there is so much that we weren't taught when we were kids locally here. So again, like Sherry says, and you know me, Eric, I do enjoy education. And that to me is super important. And because we all know that in the school system these days, there's not a lot of time to teach any kind of history, let alone the history of this area, which, like I said, I am learning is apparently very significant. So that at least with doing this, we can bring this to the public.
Now, Sherry, you were suggesting to me earlier that you don't have a persona when you are a reenactor in this case. But how do you take part in terms of what you wear and what roles you play?
Well, of course, the clothing is always interesting to me. What do people wear and how do they wear it and what does that indicate? So this is new and I'm learning. And for me, again, yeah, I'm not portraying anyone specific. We do have a few members, I think, that can trace their roots to this time period. So they may be doing their own relative, but I don't have that kind of history. But I'm always interested in women's issues, in the average person. And so as a woman, I'm just portraying an average person. And the one thing I like to focus on is cooking. And so that is something people can smell and see. Unfortunately, they can't taste. But people are fascinated by that. And I am fascinated by the foodstuffs and the recipes from the 18th century on. I have numerous reproduction and antique cookbooks, and I have used those recipes. I have always been fascinated how we as a community make food. And food, of course, is love, and it's so many other things all wrapped up in one. And so concentrating on cooking as a demonstration and then food as memory is something that I'm working on.
Let me just take it to the next step then. How will you be attired?
Well, I'll probably just be wearing something, whatever would be the average clothing for an average person. I'm not going to be one of those high, you know, I'm not going to be the lady in the ballroom this time. No, I'm going to be cooking over a fire, so I will be wearing appropriate attire for someone of, you know, middle to lower financial strata, let's say.
And have you had to make that, or did you have something you could work with already?
No, I had to make it, starting from scratch. But I'm learning, and it's fascinating to see the regional differences in clothing. There's a particular type of clothing for this area, and what kind of fibers were popular, what colors, how do people construct things, how do they remake stuff? That is all something that interests me greatly.
And Sherry, how will you be attired?
Well, usually what I do a lot of cooking before Jed joined. I like the cooking angle of it. I also did a large presentation, a demo of herbs was my specialty. Since we're on the frontier, because as I mentioned, we are the frontier here, the women didn't have a lot of finery. They were in their linens, their woolens, very comfortable clothing, like Jen said, that's appropriate for a common woman who's running a house, who's on a farm, maybe a shopkeeper or a tradesman's wife. So you're not going to be wearing fancy silks and, you know, you downplay your clothing. Although it's nice to go to an event where you could dress up, but pretty much it's the frontier, the common woman in her home. I portray a common woman. I also portray, when needed, a soldier. Women are allowed in our reenacting community portraying and being a soldier. So if I need to, I do that. I have my regimentals. I also have what they call a hunting frock. So I have two different ways to wear my attire as a soldier, and I have my weapon and my canteens and all that, you know, all the accoutrements, let's put it that way, that a soldier would have. So I have both male and female. But for the most part, I do portray a common woman.
How did you learn how to be a soldier?
There is training. We are a member of the Continental Line, and it's all about safety. You have what we call a school soldier. The men, for the most part, are the soldiers fighting these battles, the reenactors, which you will see on the weekend of July 11th and 12th. There is training. Each regiment has to meet certain standards of safety and training. It's mandatory. So we take this very seriously. It's all by the rules and regulations back in the day. You know, what was the codes back then, the military book, how to drill. It's all done appropriately from 18th century.
And so how will these days unfold then? You must have a program.
We do. I just put one together. And we will be doing a drill in safety both days. So if you want to see what that is like, we will be having that at 11 a.m. on Saturday and 1 p.m. on Sunday. So we've got some different displays going on. There's going to be a cooking tent. We're going to have ladies and gentlemen's clothing displays. So if you want to find out what people were wearing in this area or perhaps in Philadelphia, you may want to come and check that out. We have a battle at 2 p.m. on Sunday. And on Saturday, we have what we're calling the Shades of Death Walk, which is an immersive experience that the public can do along with the reenactors. You will go into the woods and there will be some fighting there. There may be some different scenarios going on and you get to witness and participate in that. I do have to put out that if you are coming specifically for that or you plan to go to that, please make sure that you have strong footwear. Please no sandals or flip-flops. It is a very rocky, difficult ground, so we don't want anyone getting hurt for real.
Sherry, have you been on the battlefield at these reenactments?
I've never actually gone into the field yet. Different local events that I've done here, I do a soldier, but I've never actually done the field in soldiery. Now, they want me to do it for the Battle of Wyoming, but I don't know. I'm undecided right now.
And who will be going at whom, then, at this battle?
Well, we're going to have, what's really unique about this, where you're going to have the bad guys, which is, you know, butlers, rangers, and the natives. The natives are really going to be featured. We're expecting to have a group that portray Native Americans, and they've actually been judged by the Iroquois Nation, and they are wonderful. They are going to probably steal the show. You are going to see something that most people have never, ever seen in this area at any reenactment are going to be the people that are portraying Native Americans. Very authentic and very frightening on the Shades of Death Walk.
Oh, yes.
The Shades of Death, as I mentioned, when the mass exodus happened after the Battle of Wyoming, the Shades of Death is one of the routes they took. And basically, it's over the swamps in the Pocono Mountains, known as the Shades of Death, because I had said the virtual depopulation of the valley. This was the notorious Shades of Death, where many people died of exposure. Some were never seen again, and it has this awful connotation with the name that it was given. So that's how we're relating to that awful journey that so many people made to escape the tragedy of the battle.
You were talking about education. The young people who haven't a clue, probably except what they see on the big screen or something like this, it's got to be a different experience.
Yes, yes. And we're certainly hoping that it will spark something in anybody, especially young people that are going to come to this event. Absolutely.
The other thing I do want to note with the Shades of Death, young children are not advised to go.
Yeah,
you don't want real young children there. They might be frightened. It's not that I'm saying it's scary, but, you know, to someone who's never experienced anything like this in the subject matter, we don't advise any young children to attend that.
When you say, okay, we're going to do this reenactment, it's the 250th anniversary of America, it's appropriate, we're going to do the reenactment of the Battle of Wyoming, how early do you have to start to plan something like this?
Not early enough.
That
never
is so true.
Early enough.
The whole idea was to lead up to the big one in 2028. That's 3 years. So the reason we're doing it now is to start out small. And what did we do right? What did we do wrong? And get interest in it. So then we're going to do it again next year. Hopefully it grows up to the big one in 250 in 2028.
Which is the 250th for?
For the Battle of Wyoming, correct. So in celebration of our 250th anniversary of independence, we figured let's do something. But it's pretty much starting out smaller, and we're hoping each year, even next year, it's bigger. And then, of course, in the 250th anniversary in 2028, it's got a lot of public interest, a lot of sponsors, you know, advertising, that type of thing. That's what we're hoping for.
Come out for this one and celebrate 250, because it is the 250th, you know, of America. So what a great way and a place to start.
Do you invite people, as you did with Jen, Sherry, to become members of the regiment?
Well, every event we go to locally, we always have information about what we do. We have a listing of events, and we have an area that we want to talk to people. Like, are you interested in history? It's very difficult with people's lifestyles right now. And being a reenactor is a major hobby. It's something like golf.
Sure.
You get very involved in it. It could be expensive, but all hobbies can be. But it's not what people think it is. The places you can go, the people that you meet, you get a backdoor to historic locations that the average public would never see. It's wonderful in my experience. And a lot of the hosting venues treat us wonderfully because we are the show. They could not do their event without us. And as I said before, our reenactment community portrays history, be it down to the authenticity of their clothing, to the food we cook, all the demos we do. We take this very seriously.
Website?
We've got the 24thcmr.org. We also have a Battle of Wyoming event weekend Facebook page. And I also have flyers, which I'm going to leave some with you. There's a QR code on the flyers if you see them, and you can get all of the information off of that. But the Battle of Wyoming is going to be happening July 11th and 12th. It's in Nesbitt Park in Kingston.
Now, Nesbitt is not Kirby Park.
No, it is not. You can park in Kirby and walk under the bridge, and you'll get to Nesbitt. There will be signs. It is a little hidden, but it's a wonderful little park.
We just heard there from Jen Ockman, who is a recent member of the 24th Connecticut Militia Regiment, and Sherry Emmershaw, who is the president of the 24th Connecticut Militia Regiment. And they came to the station to tell us about the Battle of Wyoming event weekend that will be taking place July 11th and 12th, as Jen just told us, in Nesbitt Park in Kingston. That's across the river from Wilkes-Barre. And there are Facebook pages, the Battle of Wyoming event weekend Facebook page, or you can go to the website, and that's 24thcmr.org, 24thcmr.org. Lots of different things happening on Saturday and Sunday. As we heard, drill and safety at 11 a.m. on Saturday. And what Jen and Sherry are interested in, Jen particularly this year, the 18th century cooking. There is a tent, and at 11:30 they'll begin the demos and talking about recipes and learning about 18th century cooking. 1 p.m. there's a demo of ladies and gents clothing, and then boom, Shades of Death Walk, and it may not be suitable for children, as we heard, hiking boots, strong footwear recommended. And there will be one Shades of Death Walk getting underway at 3 on Saturday, and then the next one at 4. Sunday, 11 a.m., there will be military music of the American Revolution, and the drill and safety demonstration will take place at 1 on Sunday, and that all leads up to the Battle of Wyoming reenactment. And for all the details you need, 24thcmr.org, 24thcmr.org, and you can also check the Battle of Wyoming event weekend Facebook page. The Battle of Wyoming, and that is July 11th and 12th, Nesbitt Park in Kingston, across the river from Wilkes-Barre, presented by the 24th Connecticut Militia Regiment. And for more information, on the web, 24thcmr.org.